From the College World Series in Omaha, it's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Herz on Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
Ready or not, Omaha, Nebraska, here we come.
It's time to anchor down and listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast, live from Omaha on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm your host, Max Herz. The Vandy boys are one win away from the College World Series Finals after a 6-3 victory against Mississippi State on Wednesday afternoon. Vanderbilt will play again on Friday night against the winner of Thursday's elimination game between Mississippi State and Louisville. Whichever team wins that game will have to beat Vanderbilt twice on Friday night and Saturday night to get to the best of three championship series, whereas Vanderbilt will only have to win once to get out of the double elimination portion where they currently sit at 2-0. And get to the best of three finals. It would be the third time in school history out of four Omaha trips where they would get there. Commodores got a couple of homers from Austin Martin on Sunday in their first game at TD Ameritrade Park, and they got another two-homer performance from one of their big bats on Wednesday. This time it was senior left fielder Steven Scott, homered in both the second and the fifth. That first home run was the first run of the game as Vanderbilt matched up against Mississippi State senior right-handed pitcher Peyton Plumlee. Plumlee, a little bit of a surprise starting this game. He was MSU's third starter this season. Chris Lemonis and the Mississippi State staff liked his matchup against Vanderbilt's left-handed hitters. He's got a sinking fastball that runs down and away from left-handed hitters, of which, as we've talked about all year, Vanderbilt's got plenty. Teams have been trying to figure out the best way to attack him all year, and this was MSU's stab at it, and it didn't work that well. Scott opened the scoring, went eight pitches deep in his first at-bat with nobody on and one out in the top of the second inning of a scoreless game. 3-2 pitch. Plumlee left one right at the knees and right around the middle of the plate on the inside half. Scott made no mistake, taking the 90-mile-an-hour fastball into the right field bullpen and putting Vanderbilt ahead 1-0. I thought Plumlee in general was an interesting matchup for Vanderbilt, and he did induce a lot of weak contact in this game for the Commodores, but some of those instances of weak contact ended up being hits. The homer, of course, does not fall into that category, but the two singles to start the game from Austin Martin and J.J. Blade, one was an infield single, and Blade popped one up that was not caught in shallow center, not hard hit, but both singles. So those were two of the six hits that Plumlee gave up. And then a couple more leadoff hits to get an inning started in the top of the fourth with Vanderbilt still ahead 1-0. Phil Clark shot a single pass first base out into right field, and then Pat DeMarco got one off the very end of his bat over the first baseman Allen's head and looping into foul ground for a softly hit double. So another instance of weak contact paying off for the Commodores. Good batted ball luck. And they got runners at second and third with nobody out looking to build on that 1-0 lead. Again there in that top of the fourth inning. Steven Scott up for the second time after the home run, and this time Plumlee does not go inside. He was wise to do so. He stayed away from Scott, went backdoor curveball to get a called strike one, then threw the changeup. I thought the changeup was very good when Plumlee chose to throw it. I don't think he threw it enough against the left-handed hitters of Vanderbilt in this game. Scott swung right over it, again working away, and again working down. So Plumlee ahead 0-2. Throws a fastball well out of the zone, outside, and wouldn't have been a called strike, would have certainly been ball one. Scott swung at it, bounced it to third base, where the third baseman Marshall Gilbert was the only man on the infield playing in, but he gloved it even with the bag and was able to tag Phil Clark as both of them dove back into the base. So it goes from second and third with no outs to first and second with one out, and Vanderbilt did not end up scoring in the inning. Here's Vanderbilt's Tim Corbin on the approach overall against Plumlee and how he thought he did against him.
Well, I just think not trying to do too much. I mean, he's a very good pitcher. He's crafty. His ball sinks. We had to get him up. We had to get him over the plate. And we really had to try to use the middle of the field to the best of our ability. I thought we were okay. I can't tell you. We walk away from that one. And, you know, we certainly had some good swings, but we didn't overwhelm him. I thought he did a nice job, but We just had to get him in the zone and try to use him in the middle of the field.
They didn't score in the fourth, but the Commodores put a big inning on the board in the top of the fifth, scoring 5 runs and chasing Plumlee and getting into the Mississippi State bullpen. In fact, they ended up seeing 4 pitchers in the inning and batting around, sending 10 men to the plate. Austin Martin was hit by a pitch, a curveball that got away from Plumlee. He was hit in the helmet, so he was on first base with 1 out, and that's what got it started. J.J. Blade gets ahead 2-0, fouls a couple of pitches off. Again, the changeup's giving him trouble. Blade fouled off the changeups, then got a fastball in the hitting zone and drove it. One off the wall in right center field, RBI double, scoring Martin from first base and making it 2-0 Vanderbilt. And that's the recipe here at TD Ameritrade Park. Gap-to-gap, line-drive-type power. Get some extra bases. Score guys from first base. It's the first time we've seen Vanderbilt do that in this College World Series. It was their first run not scored on a homer. So now, as we go through this inning, Vanderbilt has only scored 2 runs through these 2 games outside of the long ball. But it's worked. That was the last batter that Plumlee would face. Ethan Paul facing Tristan Barlow would single to left, putting runners at the corners with 1 out. Clark walked on 4 pitches, another pitching change, as Riley Self, the right-hander, comes in to face Pat DeMarco. And this is a big play in the game. Pat DeMarco, first pitch swinging, hits a soft grounder to first base with the bases loaded and 1 out. Tanner Allen fields it. He's in on the infield grass, has a forced play in front of him at home, but instead goes to second base to try and start a 3-6-1 double play. But the pitcher Self, first pitch he threw, reliever, coming straight into the game, doesn't get over to cover first base. And it's not a sure thing that they would have had the double play here. It is definitely not a sure thing that they would have had the double play. But they had a shot at it, and that would have ended the inning. If nothing else, the best play for Allen, since you know you may only get 1 out, is to go straight home. And the Mississippi State press conference and Chris Lemonis admitted as much after the game, saying that Tanner wanted the double play, but probably should have gone home on that one. So it goes down as a fielder's choice. First and third with 2 outs and 2 runs in. Of course, a run scored on that play that even if they only do get the 1 out by going home, Allen eliminates the run and gets the lead runner. DeMarco swung at the first pitch, and so did the man right behind him. Steven Scott crushes one. Crushes the first pitch he saw. Big, looping, hanging, breaking ball from Riley Self. A 3-run shot off the back wall of the right field bullpen. That is a deep bullpen. It is the right field version of John Norwood territory. We remember how deep that home run went, bouncing off the back wall of the bullpen out in left field in 2014. And now out on the right field side here in 2019, 5 years later. 3-run shot, second homer of the game, 4th collegiate 2-homer game for Steven Scott. 2 last season, 2 this season. He had just 7 homers in his first 49 games this year, now 8 in his last 16. Turning it on as the weather gets hot, as Steven Scott is wont to do. So those runs 3, 4, and 5 of the inning for Vanderbilt. 5 runs in the frame. That was as many as any team had scored in a game here in this College World Series coming in. Nobody through the first 7 games had scored more than 5 runs in a game. And Vanderbilt did it in 1 inning. Of course, they wouldn't score again, but they led 6-0, went on to win 6-3, and we'll talk about those late innings in the pitching side with Kumar Rocker and Tyler Brown as well as we move forward here on the Anchor Down podcast. This was also the first game in the College World Series that was decided by more than 2 runs. They've all been close. They've all been low scoring. And this 6-3 decision, despite the fact that it was a 3-run deficit and Vanderbilt scored 6, is definitely no exception. Close and low scoring without a doubt. And before we move on from Steven Scott, how about that bat flip on the second dinger? Thing of beauty. Scotty's got the sneakiest bat flip game in the SEC, without a doubt. So Vanderbilt worked them that inning. Ended up seeing 6 pitchers in the game from Mississippi State. They're going to have to win 3 straight days, and they used a lot of arms today, but they've got guys available tomorrow. We'll see if JT Ginn is able to pitch against Louisville. That game is at 7 o'clock Central Time on Thursday night. I say tomorrow as we record here on Wednesday. Many of you will be listening on Thursday. So Thursday night is when that elimination game will happen between Louisville and Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt will face the winner of that game on Friday night at 6 Central on ESPN, with Vanderbilt being able to advance to the College World Series and their opponent having to win twice to get to the College World Series finals. Kumar Rocker started the game for Vanderbilt. He was ready to put the no-hitter behind him. That's a fact. Tim Corbin said that he'll be fine. He's not going to be thinking about it. He has the mental capacity to just move on, give the team a chance to win, and they were confident all week. I heard Tim Corbin say this probably 10 times over. We're confident that he can handle himself the right way. The no-hitter is not going to be a distraction. He's moved on to his next start. And that is absolutely what he did. So not only moving on from the no-hitter, but also making his Omaha debut. Some interesting comments from Tim Corbin after the game, as asked by Adam Sparks, writer for the Tennessean, about all the first-timers on this team, as nobody here has been to Omaha before. What's it like seeing somebody pitch for the first time in this atmosphere, whether it is a freshman like Kumar Rocker, or a more experienced player, or somebody like Tyler Brown, who got the final seven outs today? Thought it was interesting to hear Coach Corbin's candid comments on this.
Is there a curiosity with you if this whole team hasn't been here before? So it's Kumar's first time, it's Tyler Brown's first time and all that. Are you curious with each individual guy to see how they handle it?
Oh, yeah. You are too. I mean, I want to see it. I mean, that's, you know, you wonder if the stage sometimes is too big, you know, for certain teams, for certain people. And, you know, just to get out here and play and settle in, that's very difficult to do. I'm proud of them. I mean, they've made nice plays defensively. They've handled themselves well. You know, it's a professional group. I admire how they act in all certain situations. We just got to continue to get better and continue playing well.
Rocker, one of those first-timers, was great. Went six full innings, threw 95 pitches, 63 strikes, and just 32 balls. So he followed up the no-hitter with a great outing. His control was great. He was a strike thrower. He didn't allow a lot of base runners. Five hits and a walk against him. Only struck out six. Pitched to contact a little bit. Mississippi State scouted him well. He did have those six strikeouts, the majority of which came on the breaking pitch. It was working again. It really was. The run he allowed was in his final inning of work. Rowdy Jordan, an RBI single to bring Elijah McNamee in. Worked around some base runners, only had one 1-2-3 inning, but Rocker was extremely, extremely effective. Talked with Phil Clark last week about catching the no-hitter, working with Kumar Rocker. By the way, Phil Clark does call the pitches himself for all of Kumar Rocker's starts, which is uncommon for Vanderbilt catchers. It's usually pitching coach Scott Brown who does the pitch calling. But with the pace that Kumar throws at, and the fact that, as Phil Clark said last week, he throws what he wants to throw and he's not scared to shake his coach off, he does the pitch calling himself, and Clark went as far to say that Rocker does the pitch calling himself. I'm not sure how fair that is, but we talked with Clark again after the game today, catching Rocker, checking in, and the impressions were the same. Really just as good as the no-hitter. The slider was exceptional, and here's Phil Clark, who's caught all of these Kumar Rocker outings, including today's great performance in Omaha.
Yeah, great stuff. It's really impressive to come out after his outing last week and have another consistent one, really good, and not let anything, you know, right out of the gate. He had runners on first and second and didn't faze him, and stayed strong the whole outing.
Slider similar to last week, you think?
Yeah, it's definitely a different pitch, and it looked good today too.
You guys led with that a lot. What do you think that did for you?
Yeah, it's when you get a team like Mississippi State, who's a great offensive team, a lot of their hitters are fastball hitters, or they're waiting to get their pitch because they're really disciplined. So being able to dump a breaking ball in early in the count is it's a really good ability to have, because most guys are going to check off of it.
It was already a long wait for him, and then you get one more day before his start. Just what was his routine like this week, kind of going day by day, and did you have to change anything when the game gets pushed back?
No, you know, they usually throw a bullpen 2 days before the start, so he threw that, and I don't know what effect it had on him, but it didn't have a negative effect, he stayed in the same routine and just took it day by day.
Rocker certainly lived up to the billing and the attention on him heading into this start on the big stage in the College World Series, even after it got pushed back. I mean, 10 days in between starts. That is not common for these pitchers. They are used to pitching with 5 or 6 days of rest in between. So Rocker said his throwing program was normal, but he credits his training staff, which means Chris Hamm, who's the strength and conditioning coach, and Tracy Campbell, who's the head athletic trainer for Vanderbilt, with keeping him moving. Keeping him moving. He said the key was just to keep moving over the course of that. Stay fresh. Feel good. I mean, it's your arm, but it's your full body, too. And he's someone who uses his lower half and is only going to be good if he's using his lower half. And he was certainly at his best today. So Rocker went six. Great outing. And Tim Corbin, as I said, had been confident that he was going to be able to put the no-hitter behind him. It wouldn't be in the back of his mind. And Coach Corbin had one final thought on that after the game about Rocker coming off the no-hitter. And an interesting mention of
what Coach Corbin calls barbershop talk, which made me smirk a little, but I thought it was very apt. Here's Coach on Kumar Rocker coming back from the no-no.
Well, he handled it well. You never know, and you go into this situation. I mean, a lot of that talk is, you know, it's barbershop talk. So it you know, you gotta. The only thing that you can do is control what's possible for you. And he did that. He was in full control of his workouts leading up to this. He's been very, very consistent throughout the year. Very impressive young guy in terms of his training habits and. His maturity and how he approaches the game. And to his point, I think once he got by the first inning, I felt like, okay, he's gonna pitch well. It's very difficult to get on the mound for the first time here in Omaha, especially for a young kid. But I thought he handled himself appropriately and very well.
Barbershop talk, basically meaning everybody's talking about this. Everybody's talking about this, but this isn't where Rocker's head's at. He's focused on his next start. He's focused on taking his team as deep as he needs to in order to win. And that's exactly what he did. So Rocker went 6. He exits with the 6-1 lead, and then Patrick Raby comes into the ballgame. Raby, you would think, the fourth starter in some circumstances for Vanderbilt this week, but they wanted to get him a touch out of the bullpen. Here's Coach Corbin on his bullpen plan today and wanting to get one of his starters in there.
Well, it's all about winning today. I mean, this is such a crucial game for so many different reasons, and we're going to utilize whoever we needed today in order to win that game, whether it was Raby or whether it was Hickman. We just wanted to piece that together. But as we got deeper into that ball game, we knew we were going to hand the ball to Patrick and at some point get Tyler in the game, and if need be, potentially throw Hickman or one of the lefties, but there was no long-term plan. You got to be very short-term in this particular situation because it's all about today.
So Raby chosen to pitch the 7th, and it did not fare too well. Facing 9-1 and 2 in the order, second pitch he throws, Marshall Gilbert goes yard off of him to left field. That makes it a 4-run game at 6-2. Top of the order, Jake Mangum doubles to left center. Raby strikes out Jordan Westberg, then gives up another double past Pat DeMarco's dive. Tanner Allen, the RBI 2-base hit, bringing Mangum in. That made it 6-3. Raby would continue on. Battled deep. Got ahead 1-2 against Elijah McNamee, then went to a full count. Went 8 pitches deep with him, and then McNamee grounded out softly to shortstop. So a great result for Raby there. Runner at 3rd with 2 outs in the 3-run game. Foscue walks, tying run to the plate, and that was it for Raby. So Tyler Brown came into the game at that point. Interesting inning for Raby, to be sure. I think seeing him out of the bullpen means that we probably won't see him start at any point this week, or going into next week as well, based on the timing of these games. Vanderbilt, by the way, did not name a starter yet. Tim Corbin said they don't know yet for Friday. They don't know who they're playing, so that's expected, but you imagine it would be Mason Hickman going on Friday, although he was hot and up in the bullpen, getting some throwing in, potentially to come into this game, when Raby ended up coming on. So Tyler Brown had been warming from the start of the 7th, right when Raby came in, and he was ready to go. He was totally warm, and throughout the back-to-back doubles, or the doubles with the strikeout in between, and then the walk to Foscue, Brown was at the front of the bullpen. It's a little bench area, enclosed by the chain link fencing, where all the players sit on the bench in the front middle of the bullpen, and then behind it, separated by the fence, are the two bullpen mounds. So Brown, once he was warm, not standing on the mound. Once somebody's ready, they usually just stand on the mound. Brown went into the bench area and was basically clawing on the bullpen door. He was chomping at the bit, ready to go. He was standing right there. You knew he was hot. You knew he was ready. And it was obvious that he was going to come into the game at some point, just how many outs that Vanderbilt would ask from him. Well, they asked for 7, and that's what he delivered. Came in, stranded both of his inherited runners, going right at Dustin Skelton, striking him out on 4 pitches. Slider for a swing and a miss on his first pitch. Fastball for a called strike on the second. Bounced a fastball to make it 1-2, and then got him looking at a slider for strike 3 to end the inning. So that was a big strikeout for Brown, and then he would go 2 full innings himself. Struck out Rowdy Jordan, allowed a 1-out single to the pinch hitter Landon Jordan. No relation, by the way. And then got a double play. Got right out of it. Harmless bouncer to shortstop to finish off that 8th inning, keep Vanderbilt ahead 6-3. Brown got the final 3 outs in the 9th. 1-2-3 bottom of the 9th inning to preserve the 6-3 win. Seeing Brown just waiting to break down the bullpen door like that. And obviously, he's the aggressor. He's such a competitor for this Vanderbilt team. I mean, he is hard-nosed. He's coming right at you. He's ready to go. But to see him, I mean, just ready to break down the outfield fence to run through, so eager to get into the game, I wanted to ask him about it afterwards. Here's why Tyler Brown was so ready to go and so hungry to close this win out.
I wanted to really bad because of last year. We all know what happened, and I feel like I needed to do it for my team, and I was excited just to do it for my brothers that were behind me.
What Tyler Brown's referring to there is the final game of the 2018 season, Game 3 of the winner-take-all Super Regional against Mississippi State for a spot here in Omaha. Brown, in the final outing of his freshman year, came in the 11th inning after Vanderbilt had tied it in the bottom of the ninth on Ethan Paul's home run. Came in a tie game, gave up four runs in the top of the 11th, and Vanderbilt ended up losing that game in 11 by the final of 10-6. Brown brought that up unprompted, by the way. He was not specifically asked about last year. I just asked him why he was so hungry to get those final outs. So you could tell that was weighing on his mind. He wanted to get this Mississippi State team that got him when it mattered last year. Well, he got him on the big stage. He got the final five outs on Sunday to finish off Louisville in the 3-1 win, and now the final seven today, as Vanderbilt won it 6-3. How about the pitch economy, by the way? Seven outs on 26 pitches for Tyler Brown. 26 pitches to get seven outs. The final seven outs of the game, too. 19 strikes and just seven balls against those seven batters faced for the sophomore closer who tied the Vanderbilt record for most saves in a single season. And again, saves don't mean everything, but they certainly mean something at the college level. And with how long Brown has gone for these last two, he certainly deserves it. He tied Brian Miller, by the way, 2013. You got to win a lot of games to get 16 saves in a college season. The 2013 Vanderbilt team won a lot of games, and the 2019 Vanderbilt team has now won even more. Vanderbilt 56-11, most wins in school history. They set that mark against Louisville in Game 1 of the College World Series. Brown has been there in any circumstance. Tim Corbin is a big fan of his, as we well know. Here's the coach after the game on the man who wanted to finish it off and did.
Well, you just need to get seven outs, but, you know, he's that kid that, you know, I don't look at him as I see Tyler as a potential starter. He just happens to be a starter at the end of the game, but he just needed to do his job. And whether it was seven outs or three outs or two outs, he just needed to do his job. And Tyler is very impressive in terms of being able to feel the moment, settle in, focus, and execute. Those are very difficult things to do, as you know, for any pitcher, a pro pitcher, amateur pitcher. He does it very well.
That sums it up on Tyler Brown. I mean, he's almost got a metal arm at this point. He throws so much for Vanderbilt. He's always ready to go. He's only had really the one bad outing all year in the regional against Indiana State, and since then he's been lights out. His two outings here in Omaha have been as high leverage gets. First and third, two outs, tying run at the plate, top of the seventh inning, and knowing in the back of your head, or, I mean, even in the front of his mind, that he has to go the rest of the game. That's Vanderbilt's vision for him, to go the rest of the game, get those final seven outs, and he wouldn't have it any other way. So the start and the finish on the mound, the big stories for Vanderbilt on the defensive side. Harrison Ray with a couple of nice plays, one on a line drive in the air. He catches everything in the air around him. Everything, everything, everything. He's been impressive at second base. He had a nice diving play as well, sliding up in between his position and the first base position for the first out in the top of the ninth. And if Mangum gets that hit there, that ninth inning may look a little bit different. Top of the order, Brown took care of him. I would expect it to be Mason Hickman Friday night for Vanderbilt. We don't know that for sure, but I would expect Mason Hickman. The only other option, really, is Ethan Smith. So I would say either Hickman or Smith. I guess there's a chance it could be Jake Eater, but I would say most likely Mason Hickman. If it's anybody else, probably going to be Ethan Smith for Vanderbilt. And then Saturday, if they do lose on Friday night, it would be winner take all, go into the College World Series best of three final series on Saturday night, Vanderbilt versus either Mississippi State or Louisville. If they get there, Drake Fellows would potentially be able to come back on 5 days rest, and that would be my guess. I think it would be Drake Fellows starting that game. Then if you win it, you go with Rocker and Hickman if he hasn't pitched again, and then game three, you figure it out from there in the final series, which would be Monday, Tuesday, and if necessary, the title game on Wednesday. Another good clean win for Vandy, I thought. I echo Tim Corbin's comments that they didn't overwhelm Peyton Plumlee. They certainly didn't overwhelm him. They did him some favors, but they got him. Stephen Scott got him, and that was a big first swing. We've seen Vanderbilt score first with the long ball in the early innings both times here in Omaha, and that's helped. That's helped the offense grow from there. J.J. Bladé had the RBI double. They stay alive in the inning on what could have been a double play, and then Scott goes yard again. So Stephen Scott brings the power, 15 homers last year. He's about to hit that total again. 14 home runs this season after the two on Wednesday afternoon. Hey, we'll keep the coverage going from here in Omaha. Follow me on Twitter if you don't already at Max Herz Talks. Follow at 1025 The Game. TheGameNashville.com is where you can find all of our podcasts. Go to Pod Center and then click on Anchor Down to see all of our episodes. Hey, we're live here in Omaha. It's been fun so far. Great experience. Vanderbilt playing well. They're playing their best ball. And in a matchup today between what very well may be the two best teams here, Vanderbilt proved superior. Vanderbilt was at their best in this game. Again, a 6-3 final, the Commodores over Mississippi State. Vanderbilt plays again Friday night, 6 Central ESPN, against the winner of the Thursday game between Mississippi State and Louisville. We'll have plenty of coverage not only of that game, but between now and then as well, so keep your eyes on Twitter and on our podcast page as we bring it to you. Thanks for anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. Vandy boys one win away from the College World Series Finals. It's the Anchor Down Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game and TheGameNashville.com.